Dr. D, you've reached out a couple times over the last couple years with some interesting data, and I wanted to have that conversation now. You've mentioned that you're seeing more and more deficiency with vitamin D and thinking about the increased cloud cover. You've also mentioned that you've seen an increase in fungal infections and wondered if that's having to do with, with the cold or wet. Anything else noteworthy you want to mention, or what do you just want to share some observations here?
I think the anxiety is through the roof as well. Everybody is in this state of anxiousness that they don't really know. I can't tell you how many times, oh, I feel like something is not right or whatever. And he explained, you try and ask them if there's anything in particular in their life that's happening that's causing them to feel that way. But a lot of the times there isn't. It's just almost a herd unease, if you will, is what it feels like, yeah, there's all sorts of things. Like I said, that very low vitamin D is crazy. I've never seen single digits like that before once, and now it's like a daily event.
And so I didn't mean to steal a headline from you here. Is that a new, like that's a new development, or how has that changed?
Well, it's low vitamin D is not new. We all spend our times on the computers other than outdoors, getting the direct sunlight. But this year, the difference is the numbers. Everybody, even the low ones, would be on the range in the past, from 16 to 20. That used to be a bad level considered. This year, I've had many, many, many single digits, one as low as four. So, and the funny part is, some of those guys worked outdoors. Everybody and their mother have some sort of a fungus problem at some point. So, yeah, all the things to stock up, antifungal would probably be a good idea. And you can probably get that pretty cheap at the dollar store, I think. Clotrimazole, it's the same. It doesn't matter if it costs $1 or $15, but that would definitely be a good thing to have around.
And I know there's some fish antifungals that are available for that kind of thing.
Orals can be tricky because, and that's probably a thing that I can share, like oral antifungals are really hard on the liver. So sure, you can save some of those for the really bad cases, but
Sorry, you broke up there a little bit. You said topicals are probably better.
this is safer for one. If you're gonna have a really bad one, you're probably gonna need, but you just need to be conscious that if you're taking an oral, you're beating up your liver. When we start someone on that, their liver values do. So, just to give you an idea, but yeah, topicals you can use as much as you want. So,
What about that vitamin D deficiency? How do we address that?
yeah, I've been thinking a lot about that. So, there's only two ways to get it, either in a supplement form, and it's expensive, or via direct sunlight, which could become a problem. I know that in Alaska they suffer from that a lot, and they do have some lights that they use that helps them with that. For us here, this is kind of new. So, but yeah, that's probably something I should look into. Because, lack of vitamin D will make you tired and achy and depressed. So it's a very significant. It's kind of similar to the symptoms you have from having a low thyroid. It's very similar.
We might have to follow up on that one. I know we can get it from oyster mushrooms and some other mushrooms as well. We had talked about that in the past, but yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, it's a lot of things that we haven't necessarily, when I say we, I mean everybody, thought about because it's been so readily available all the time that, we probably should be thinking about where you can get it locally. And that's kind of what I've been trying to figure out on a lot of things. So, and I don't mind having these conversations with you. And, you know, every now and again that you have any questions, just feel free to reach out to me. It's not a problem. We're all in the same boat. I'll try and give the advice that I can in terms of, you know, medical part and whatever else you need to know that I might know.
Yeah, absolutely. I really appreciate that because it's, you know, we all have to sort of, we're on this together and we all have to pitch in with what we can right now. So that's very generous of you. And I know a number of people really appreciate that.
Yeah.
With that in mind, let me actually ask a medical focused question. Let's go to those. I've got a few from the Ice Age Farmer Discord that I'll ask, but I just want to sort of start the conversation in this domain by saying, you know, I and a lot of people like yourself are trying to prepare ourselves and our families for these more uncertain times ahead. Mm-hmm. As a doctor, what isn't being discussed or what have we neglected to consider?
Well, one thing, though, I think it's the medical supplies, what we read from, you know, survivalist groups or lists of prepping supplies or whatever. I mean, you know, there's a multitude of stuff like that that you can find. Not necessarily, you know, some of it, it's not needed. And there's other things that you should have and they might not be mentioned. Like I was telling you about the antifungal cream, for example, is one of them. You know, with time, and if you want, I can definitely give you a better idea of that and send you some idea, you know, lists of things that I think that are important. One thing I say, and even on my practice, is you always should practice what you preach, and you should try it out because, you know, almost everything in life, it looks really easy when you watch a YouTube version of it or you know, read an instruction manual or whatever, until you get on and do it. Now, you know, you probably, which prepper has a, you know, like a suturing kit, for example, on their kit? I'd say probably everybody, right? But all many people have actually tried to use it. And, you know, it's not a hard skill, but it's something that, you learn with practice, and until you do it, you don't really know what you're doing. And, you know, when your son just opened a huge gash in his leg and he's bleeding and there's no way you can find any other sort of help, probably not the best time to learn how to do that. So that would be one thing. And, you know, I can help you with some ideas there too if you want. But, you know, on the kit, there's all sorts of things that I might not be as glamorous, like, you know, those gunshot wound, you know, packers and things that you find here, there, and everywhere that you're supposed to put inside a gunshot wound and you'll stop the bleeding and I guess you come out okay at the other end of that. Being in traumas for 12 years... Mm-hmm. My advice to you on that is don't get shot. because, you know, sure, so you got a hole and then you plug the hole. That hole makes perfect sense, right? But mm-hmm. What about what's next? You know, is that inside of you? Or do you reach out? Or do you get it? If you don't get it, how do you treat the wound? I mean, those are really basic skills that, I know they don't sound basic, but they really are. And, you know, I can help you out with that as well and on your channel or whichever way you want me to do. But I think there's things that people need to learn and need to practice because, you know, if you've got one of those clopping, whatever they are, to put in the hole, that sounds like a great deal. You'll probably die of sepsis or bleeding, you know, within the next 12 hours or so. And so that clotting, as glorious as it might have looked, really did nothing for you. So instead of spending all one's money on stuff like that, one might be wanting to buy sutures or something like that instead that would be actually effective. You know, like I said, we live in a very heavy gangster type area, and I dealt with shootings daily. And if you ask me how many times I used any sort of substance like that to pull out the holes, the answer is very easy. Never. So should you go and pay $15 for one of those deals? Probably not. But you probably should be, you know, learning about how to suture. And I can, you know, it's not hard. Us in the medical profession have a tendency to talk in a different language, sound superior or smarter than everybody else. And we, like magicians, we kind of, you know, hide the trade to sound like, oh my gosh, look what I can do with the hands and this and that. But it's a profession, like no different than anybody else, carpenter or anything like that. It's all skills that you can learn, and especially those basic wound care and, you know, trauma situations. There's only actually a few things you need to learn in order to make it out okay in the other end. So, and like I said, fancy cloths, it's probably not it. So, but yeah, I can help you with getting something like that together.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a huge subject, and it's the kind of thing that when you need medical knowledge, it's not like you want to go find a book and start reading. You need, you know, it's an acute situation you want to take care of right away. Are there courses like trauma, basic trauma medicine, or even just CPR, you know, where you would recommend people start just getting acquainted with this kind of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, any CPR course would be a good place to start. But you know, not everybody has a farm. If you have a farm, you get a little bit of contact with that on the, you know, with your animals. You see the births and the deaths, and so you get a little bit of hunting. But then I would, like, for example, so you got a suture kit that you bought in this expensive, you know, whatever it is that you bought to save you from the end of the world deal. You know, you got it. So what's he doing in the case? Nothing. You're not learning. So you can go to YouTube all day, and don't go to John Schmo video from the basement, but look at all colleges that do, like, nursing schools or medicine schools. They have videos like that the students have to watch so they learn the skills as well. And do that free. You go in and look them up. Even on YouTube, there's like a ton of them. And then you watch it, and then you go grab a piece of meat from somewhere, and you make a cut in it, and then you fix it. And you do that a couple of times, 3-4 times, and you make a few mistakes, and you learn. And so when you do go through that situation that you need it now, you take a deep breath, and you remember all those times that you did it in a, you know, pork or chicken or whatever you decided, and then you realize that, you know, that human texture is a little different, but you kind of got the technique down, so you should be all right. Other than, oh, okay, now I pulled these and I got the needle holders and I got a needle and, oh my God, what do I do next? You know, like everything, you know, you don't know how to drive until you drive. And so I'm not preaching for everybody to go out and be a surgeon, but, you know, small stuff like that. And, you know, there's like liquid Band-Aids and Dermabond and things like that if you don't think you're going to be able to suture anybody, you can use those special glues and things like that and get away with it.
I don't know if you're familiar with Where There Is No Doctor, but are there any books you would recommend for, you know, medical guides for these kinds of situations?
Well, I think everybody should have whatever the newer or whatever. I mean, things don't change that much. It doesn't have to be the newer. So go on Amazon and get a good anatomy and physiology textbook. So everybody should have one of those. Mm-hmm. Then you got the Dictionary of Medicine. It's a huge Bible style kind of book. Good luck finding anything there in a hurry. But there's all sorts of things that you can get much easier to. So everybody should have maybe a CPR or even more advanced, maybe a trauma training manual. That normally is pretty technical in the sense that shows you the procedures and the steps to take, because people need to memorize that before they take a test, for example. And then that depends on how in-depth you want to get.
Are there any plants, Dr. D, that you grow, or other ways, you know, perhaps colloidal silver, that you are creating your own medicine?
Well, that's one thing that I, like I said, our garden hasn't really been where I want it to be, but that's something that we are planning on doing. I'm actually getting some books on the matter. One of the things that I did get that I'm trying out, I don't know about as a medicine, but, you know, a way to stay healthy as well, is we're doing Jerusalem artichokes on our yard. Yep, I know, Jerusalem and Northern Washington have nothing in common, but they're looking pretty good. And we haven't harvested any yet, but they call it artichokes, but they're really more like a potato. And so the deal about that is it would be like a potato replacement with a type of starch that it has a zero glycemic value. So if you are diabetic or close to a diabetic and you need something bulky to fill you up without jacking up your blood sugar, you know, like a potato would, for example, you could try these guys and would have no effect on your diabetes. So once I harvest those and I'll let you know how good they are before I start preaching for all diabetics to plant those in their backyard. But it seems to be a pretty good deal. And then others, you know, like being a more trained on Western medicine, now I'm going through that journey myself of learning more natural pathways and figure out from what I see that would be helpful that we can actually grow successfully where we live, you know. Because there's also a lot of snake oil, by the way. You know, buyer beware. A lot of the people want to sell this stuff just for the sake of, oh, this is healthy, and oh, these will make your eyes look better, and these will kill your diabetes. You know, there's all sorts of weird claims out there. So that's one of the things that I'm trying to do is go for all of that and see which ones really have a value and be able to be, you know, planted and grown in our own place. Because I know that before Walmart and other chain pharmacies, you know, people got away, you know, got their treatments and naturally, and they made it just fine. That's why we're still here. So
somehow we made it. Yeah, that's amazing. Perfect. Let me ask one final question that I ask of all my guests. Dr. D, what do you do in these stressful times for self-care?
You know, family time. It's, you know, I can give you the spiel of, you know, eat healthy, exercise, go out on walks, camping, go out, you know, swimming. And my answer is all of the above. Like I said, you know, you don't know what's there tomorrow. So we got to make the best of today. And you're better to share it with than your family. So if you do things together, it's, you know, you're making memories and it's a stress reliever, you know. It doesn't matter how bad of a day I had at work, you come home and your kid tells you a story or gives you a smile, and then that most of that clears away, you know. And I guess that it might not be very scientific, but it's that's what we do. We try and do things. We just went out, just came back. I told you I was out in the middle of nowhere, middle phone reception. You know, we like doing that, going into the do a lot of dry camping and things like that. So now we're not that cool, you know. We got a huge trailer that we carry along, but it's not like we starting a campground from scratch. So I don't want to give people the wrong idea.
Roughing it, huh?
Oh yeah. Forget about CNN. Look at the deer.
Well, Dr. D, thank you again for taking the time. I really appreciate you. I know you're busy, so I really appreciate you taking some time to have this conversation. And I will, you can count on some future conversations. I'm excited to hear that because I've got a growing list as we speak of questions that we can return to in the future. So thanks for that, and I'll look forward to it. Thanks so much.
Yeah, no problem, Christian. Anytime.